right, coaches, welcome to another episode of the Coaches Collective podcast. We are fired up to be here with Coach Brennan Marion. He's the wide receivers coach and little passing game coordinator as well at the University of Texas. Me and Coach Marion go back to his days at Howard University when he was lighting it up, beating FBS teams. And Coach, we're excited to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate y'all, man. And hug him.
There you go. You got to get that in there, right?
Well, I told you I'm a native West Texan, so appreciate the hat.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, this is our first live in person. Yeah, I mean, we've done everything on Zoom over COVID, so it's kind of fun to be in person and get to chop it up a little bit. But I want to start with a little bit of your story, because I think you might have one of the most unique stories of your journey through playing and also coaching. So I know, you know, you probably have like a little bit of a Cliff Notes version of you coming up through as both a player and a coach, but I would love for our audience to be able to hear a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, I kind of live by the saying, you know, one great year changes your life. And I kind of learned that through being a junior college player. It's basically, you know, at one junior college, it didn't work out, went to another one and was kind of living out of the locker room. And, you know, one day I just made a decision, like, you know, I'm not going to go back home. I'm going to be great. Like, going to go Division I. I was taking like 7 classes a semester, a quarter. We were in the quarter system. So like 24 units. If you can imagine taking 24 units, living in a locker room, no books, living place to place, just trying to find a way. Barely eating. I think we used to eat like, we used to share like double cheeseburger, me and a friend, like cut it in half. Geez. That's how, you know, like Jack in the Box tacos, like we were just trying to figure it out and make it. So I saw what happened after that year. I was an All-American, made the Dean's List, and got the scholarship offer to the University of Tulsa. And kind of what matched my mindset was when I got around Coach Malzahn, Coach Graham, Coach Norvell. They were all there at the time. And they kind of had that same mindset. They were hungry. They had something to prove. And, you know, they're all about that. You know, we can do it right now. We can do it big. And kind of that's just carried me through coaching. And I've kind of always, every time I go to a new school or meet kids, it's all about like, just focus on the right now. Like, let's do everything possible to be great right now. I don't think about, you know, 5 years, 10 years down the road, if we just focus on, you know, being great each day and doing everything we can to be the best version of ourselves, then, you know, it'll take us and catapult us to a higher level. So yeah, that's kind of just elevated me from being a high school coach at a small school. I started off my first school as a high school coach. I had 7 players in the meeting and the lady was like, I don't know if you'll be able to even make a team, but if you can, then great. If not, you'll just be the gym teacher and health teacher this year, and we'll try to build it for the next year. And so we went from 7 players to 45 on, I had 19 on varsity and the rest were on JV, just because I put everybody who never played football, you just go to JV unless you know, we're pretty decent. We moved you up, but you know, so we did that, went to the playoffs, lost in the first round. And, you know, I started getting calls from, you know, other schools, and college coaches were asking me to come coach with them. And I went to high school, or I went to Pennsylvania where I'm from, still as a high school head coach, and kind of same thing, a program that was 0-10 the year before, had like, it's quad A, that's the biggest division at the time in Pennsylvania. And they had like, I want to say they had like 38 kids that showed up in the first meeting. I'm like, this is not quad A football.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So started recruiting the hallways and getting everybody to, you know, come out and play. And we ended up with 125 kids on the team. And we, you know, won the conference championship for the first time in school history. Wow. You know, so that was kind of like, boom, all right, one great year again. Let's go to college now. Let's try this college thing. So went to college and, you know, kind of did that deal, GA at Arizona State with under Norvell and Coach Graham, and learned a lot there, just being like, you know, like Vizio and Exo.
Right.
I'm like,
tools,
in high school,
tools we used, the trade.
We used huddle, you know, right. But it's still the same coaching,
right.
You know, philosophy and things. So, you know, getting a chance to do that really was, you know, special and let me know that, yeah, I can coach at college. And I remember there's a player, Kalen Balazs, who told me like, coach, just do your thing. Be you. Don't worry about like how these guys coach and just be yourself. And that really helped me from the standpoint of like, every time you walk in a room, whatever you have, like that's what people need. Like yeah, you don't need try to, you know, like, you know, coach a certain way. You don't have to coach that way. Coach what's authentic to you. And I kind of just took that all the way through college and, you know, just boom, 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 boom. And now we're here at Texas. So it just kind of keeps rolling. But really, it's just the one great year can change your life. And I really have the greatest, like, you know, as a coach, I feel like you have to be able to inspire people. They have to look at you and get some juice, some energy when they see you. And really, when you look at my story and you just see, like, man, this dude went from, like, 1 year I was literally, like, living outside in a locker room, press box, under the bleachers. Right. Then the next year I'm, like, the top receiver in college football. You know, right. It's just like, right. Wow.
Man. That's wild.
That's incredible.
You said something I love, and it's I'm of the same mindset. It's like, I'm not worried about what's happening 10 years down the road. Like, yeah, I've got goals. I know, like, in the back of my mind, I know where I want to be. Yeah. But I don't even waste time thinking about that. Yeah. It's like, what's important now? In your story, I mean, it's something I want to hear your perspective on, because you've done it. I mean, it's like, past 10 years, how many times you've moved?
Yeah.
10 times. I mean, you're a younger guy, and forgive me if I'm wrong, not married right
not
now.
Married, no.
So for me, like, when I was at Texas Tech and talked to these guys that have been in the game for 20 years, and they're saying the same things, like, man, we've moved around 15 times in the past 20 years. Ultimately, for me, it was like, for me and my family, what I don't think it's sustainable. How's that affected you? I mean, obviously, you're a younger guy that's moving up the ranks,
yeah.
Being where your feet are, but ultimately, it's like every year another opportunity comes up that's like, hey, I got to go for this.
Yeah.
Going to be a point in time where maybe you are married and have a family, and like, how's that going to work?
It's been difficult. I'd say I'm blessed from the standpoint of, you know, I guess everybody grows up differently. You know, where I'm from in Pittsburgh, you know, I always tell a story about my uncle. I asked him, why'd he marry my aunt? And he goes, you know, I just wanted her to get my benefits because I got sick. You know, so where I'm from, I mean, you know, other parts of the country that I lived, I had to learn the different norms of, you know, like when I lived in Oklahoma, went to college in Oklahoma, like people were married at like 19, 20.
Right,
I'm from
right.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where not many people are, you know, marriage is not like at the forefront of, you know, what you do. So, you know, just being authentic to me. I mean, I'm blessed with a great ex-wife who takes care of my son, my daughter's mom, who helped me through junior college. They do a great job of taking care of my kids when I'm away, you know, mm-hmm. and my kids know that dad loves them to death. I show up for all their events that they do.
Yeah.
But it is difficult from the standpoint of during football season. That's a really rough time. You know, that's why people are like, why he's so damn close to his players. Mm-hmm. I'm close to them because I'm away from my kids at that time.
No doubt.
You know, and, you know, just realistically, like the off season, I'm always in California with my kids, you know, because I'm just, that's my time where it's like, dad is going to be here. Like every single thing that your guys think is like, it's more important than anything else to me. So, because for me, recruiting's not that hard. Because I'm more relatable to the guys and I understand their story. So I've been able to make those jumps and moves. And at first it was rough because my first 3 to 4 moves, my ex-wife was with me. Mm-hmm. You know, we were married at the time.
Yeah.
And she struggled and went through some stuff like postpartum and different things when my son was born. And that's hard when you're a GA and you're working. You know, like I remember Coach Norvell, we sat down one time. He had a job come open and he was like, man, you really weren't yourself at Arizona State. And I said, Coach, you know, my like wife was going through postpartum.
Yeah.
I was dealing with her like, you know, very depressed, upset. And I'm like here from 5:30 in the morning till midnight with you.
Right.
You know, and so you go through things. But, you know, the biggest blessing for me is like they do such a good job. And the opportunities they presented to me that my kids get to live a life that I never
no doubt.
Got to live. I mean, I didn't have anything close to, my kids wouldn't know what to do if it rained. I mean, they've never seen a bad day.
Right.
You know, so from that standpoint, you know, being able to be a provider and mm-hmm. give them a different life than I had, I feel like, you know, dad does a good job there. You know, from the time standpoint, obviously it's not where I want it to be, but you know, just blessed that I actually have, you know, I have friends that don't have such good situations with the mom taking care of, you know, and, you know, so I'm blessed that I have people that they really do a great job.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I was going to say, like, I think we've known each other for a little while now, and it's been cool to see, like, all that off, like, not all that off time, because you don't have a lot of off time, but anytime you do, it's like you're in Cali, like, you're at a soccer game, you're at a recital, like, it's cool to see, you know, as we've been friends over the years, like, you've been able to take advantage of that time and build those.
So I told my daughter one time, she's like, you know, really spoiled, you know, so, but I was telling her one time, like, I showed up one time and she was like, you know, mad about a friend or something. It was like all acting all upset. And I was like, I just flew 3,000 miles. Like, we're going somewhere. We're going to have a good time. Get a smile on your face. Let's go get some juice.
Right.
You know, and I just told her the story, you know, and I don't like to talk bad on my parents because, you know, just, you know, they did the best they could through the circumstances that they had. But, you know, my dad lived in walking distance of me, like 10 minutes. He could walk to my house. Mm-hmm. And I probably saw him from 0 to 16 on one hand, maybe 4 or 5 times, you know.
Wow.
And he could walk to my house. Like, I mean, I'm talking about like walk down the street. And I've, you know, there's probably freaking flyer miles. I flew to California 15, 20 times in a year. When I was all the way in D.C., I remember Coach London. I worked with him for 3 years. And he was like, you can't miss nothing with your kids. So you got to get back out there. Like, right after a game was over, I'd get on a flight from D.C., to California back and forth and then come back and be at work on Monday, you know, like just going back and forth. So, you know, for me, that means a lot. Just you got to be able to show up, like regardless, you know, a lot of guys, I try to tell these guys that have babies young and stuff like, dude, that's still your number one priority. You got to show up. Like, I don't care what the situation with the mom is, how you feel about her, how it happened. You show up for your kids.
I wanted to take it back to another seemingly important relationship in your life with Coach Malzahn, kind of the guy that gave you your start at Tulsa, kind of with what you guys were doing offensively and really gave you a lot of opportunity to make big plays in that offense. What does that relationship look like? As obviously you were a star player for him, and then as you've gotten into the coaching ranks, like what are some of the things you've taken from Coach Malzahn?
The greatest thing that Gus had, just from his ability to, you know, like the whole story is Norvell discovered me. He was at UCA.
Okay.
Right. And he showed the tape to Malzahn when he got the GA job at Tulsa. And he was like, who's that dude? Get him here right now. So I've always been like a Malzahn fan. People don't really understand why I am the way about him. But it's really like all these other college coaches were like, you're from the hood, you're this, you're in trouble, you know, like all this stuff. And Coach Malzahn never really judged me. He never really questioned me on that stuff. He just was like, he called me on a Wednesday. I was in Tulsa on a Thursday. I showed up in a tie. Like I showed up in a tie with a suit on because I'm like, all right, I haven't got a lot of opportunities right now. Like I need to make this one happen. So I borrowed my junior college coach's tie and suit and I showed up in Tulsa like, Coach, whatever it is, I'll do it, man. Let's go. And he was like, all right, I got you. Boom.
Wow.
So, you know, I always, you know, like that dude got me out of the projects and my family, and you know, we've lived good ever since I really signed that scholarship check to Tulsa, you know, so our scholarship to Tulsa. So that really changed my life. But from the standpoint of our relationship, I mean, he's helped me. You know, he called the day of the national championship game. He called an athletic director for me after they lost when he was the head coach of Auburn. They played at Florida State. After the loss on the bus, he called the athletic director for me and said, like, Brennan's a great guy. You got to hire him, and helped me get this job at Waynesboro High School.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he's always been there for me. He's always picked up the phone for me. He's always, you know, people say, why haven't you worked for him? I just, from the standpoint, like, I know him. I mean, he has in his brain, he's going to do his stuff the way he does it. Yeah. He's not really changing on that. Yeah. And, you know, for a guy who's been successful pretty much every stop, you know, Auburn hasn't had the success that he had when he was there. He was the only guy who was really beating Nick Saban.
Right.
You know, Nick Saban said that he changed his offensive philosophy watching you know, going against Gus.
That's high praise right there.
You know what I'm saying? So he's been a guy who's always won and always done it his way. And he's never really, you know, he didn't cuss us out. He didn't judge us. He didn't, you know, he had a lot of kids that, you know, at Tulsa, people don't really know the story that year that we had to set all those records, but we had a 5,000-yard passer, 3,000-yard receivers, and a 1,000-yard rusher. The 3,000-yard receivers showed up. We all showed up in July. So it wasn't like we, you know, and Paul Smith was there the year before and Terrian Adams was there the year before. And we set all those records and we didn't have any, like, you know, people say the kid got to be there in spring ball. He got to be. No, he doesn't. He just has to love the game and do what the coach asked him to do and use his talents. And he always put us in a position to win. And I just remember him calling us, like, it'd be like 11 o'clock at night before the game. And he's like, you ready? On this play, you're getting the ball. You ready? You're going to score on this play. I'm telling you, don't mess up. You're going to score on this play. You know, and his mind is always like that. I was just with him last week, and, you know, he's walking me around the athletic directors and just seeing him, like, my mom and people, and just seeing, like, him being like, man, you really inspired me. He's like, I show your tweets to the team. And, you know, that type of stuff is really, you know, a big deal to me. So, you know, Gus is gold in my book. You know?
No doubt.
Man, you seem like you're a guy that, and you talked about it, you got a knack for being able to relate with kids right now. And it helps being a younger coach too.
Yeah.
But with that, I think a lot of guys struggle with is like, as we know, like, I mean, how much has the game changed as a coach really from the past, just over the past like 5 years?
Yeah.
How do you kind of teeter that line of like being able to relate, but also being, also leading a room?
Yeah, I think a lot of it for me comes up through like the upbringing that I had and the coaches that I had. So I'm still true to the old school way. I'm very, if you've ever seen me coach, it's not, Dan can tell you, it's not like happy and friendly.
Right, right,
and,
right.
Yeah, you get after
you know, I just kind of have segments where I let the kids be themselves because I just remember, you know, I always try to tell coaches, don't forget about the time when you were a player.
Right, right.
You know, like, when it's warm up and it's pre-practice, you'll see my guys dancing and playing. Then it's like, when it's time to go, it's like time to, like, we're locking in, we're serious, we're getting this done. Like, we're not talking crap, we're executing the play, we have fun after the play. Like, it's like all business and all work while we're out there. And I think if you give them that freedom to still have their little bit of, you know, because football to me, why I always, like, I was so serious when I played because I had this, like, I have to make it to the NFL. I have all these people I got to take care of. I had this, like, heavy burden of responsibility at a young age. I mean, I helped my mom pay rent when I was 9, 10 years old. Like, I worked 2 and 3 jobs with her. So, for me, I always let the guys have fun because one day I was projected a first or second round pick. The next morning, I woke up with a torn ACL. And, like, what the heck are we going to do? You know, and every day I was like, I'm making it. I'm serious. I didn't, you know, people say like, enjoy the process. I didn't. I was just like, I'm making it. I'm focused. Leave me alone. Y'all play too much. You know, like, and so I try to let guys have that burden of relief, you know, especially now with the, you know, these kids have anxiety problems, depression. They're very stressed out from the standpoint of, like you said, everybody's talking about what they'll be in 5, 10 years.
Right, right.
They're not thinking about, like, the kid just needs to, like, have a good day today. Like, he needs to be able to get through today.
Right.
You know, go to class, get in the weight room, do what he needs to do, and be healthy. Like, you know, be just a normal person of society. You know, like, but it's like, you got to make it for your whole family. You got to do this. You got to, you're going to the league in 5 years just because you got an NIL deal. No, that's just because you were a decent prospect or you performed good in a game or, you know, that's just, they don't understand that. That's just the immediate. That's the right now. That's not really the big picture of it. And so many people get focused and caught up, you know, there. So my coaching philosophy really is that I'm going to challenge the hell out of you. I'm going to bring the rag all the way out, get the best out of each player. I coach every player hard, but I give them all love. And really, we have a ton of fun, you know, in the meeting room. We play music. We watch inspirational videos. We laugh and joke. We talk about life. But when it's time to do the work, like, it's like, put your hard hat on and let's go.
No doubt. No doubt. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting about your journey is you go from high school head coach, you're running the show, When you get to college, obviously you have a stint as a GA, but then pretty quickly you got an opportunity to call it, to be an offensive coordinator, and to design an offense and call an offense. And you did some really unique things that I really enjoyed following, especially early on in my career. And now you're in a position of, you know, working a room, really focusing in on technique and being a technician and a craftsman. But do you miss calling plays? Like, how has that transition been through your career?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I actually got to have the conversation with the Madden family, you know, and as I go through being a position coach and, you know, being from a coordinator, high school head coach, really in my mind, I'm a head coach. Yeah. You know, yeah. I don't really consider myself an offense or a defensive guy. I just a football dude who loves to be around the game and I want to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, at Hawaii, it was a little bit harder for me because I was back with my college coach, Coach Graham, mm-hmm. and he runs things a certain way. So it was a little bit harder for me to really be the guy who like permeates through the team, you know. But at Pitt, I was able to, you know, hang out with the defense guys, hang out with the offense guys and just talk about winning and, you know, like whatever the offense coordinator wanted to do, Coach Whipple. I made sure that we did it like the best in the world, the best in the country, everybody. You know, I talked to every, like quarterbacks, running back. If you asked any of those guys, they would tell you that Coach Marion loved us all the same and he coached us all the same. He challenged all of us, offense, defense, kicker, punter, you know, like whoever it was, I was like, I'm on it, you know? And so guys get so caught up, I feel like, in saying like, you know, for me, I had opportunities this past offseason to be a coordinator at FBS and Power 5 programs.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, G5 and Power 5 programs. But it's like, am I going to get full autonomy to call the plays? You know, I might help you here. You know, like, to me, that's just not important. I came to Texas because it's a great opportunity from the standpoint. It's Texas.
It is.
Okay? I don't care what anybody says. At the end of the day, it's still Texas, no right? And Texas football is the biggest in the country, period. It's not up for debate. And secondly, if we're able to flip things, if the one great year can change your life mentality happens here, it's a head coaching position in my mind. It's a, you know, the ability to really go somewhere. And for me, I want to be around the greatest coaches. You know, I was able to be around a great defensive head coach and Pat Narduzzi. And then I was able to be in the offense coordinator room with Mark Whipple, who's won a Super Bowl, Coach Big Ben. You know, he's done a lot of things. You know, and able to be around and learn more, right? Because I'm growing from the standpoint now with Coach Sarkisian, one of the greatest offensive minds in football since he's gotten. I mean, the dude was at BYU, a star quarterback at BYU, and he's kind of just went like this his whole career. And he's a real person, you know, like he's had some issues and he's overcame them and boom, you know, and he's still going upward, trending upward, you know. Yeah. And so he's been at Alabama, he's been in the NFL. And he's teaching me, you know, so now I have, if you look at it, I've been around great defensive head coaches and Mike London and Todd Graham and Pat Narduzzi. So I have that defensive mindset on how they run practice. And now I've been around great offensive coaches, you know, Mark Whipple, Coach Malzahn, Coach Norvell, Steve Sarkisian. And I have this big folder and file now that I can take around. I'm like, boom, I know exactly when it's my time, you know, because guys are like, I want to call plays. Well, like, that's important and all, but really back in the day, if you look at the young coaches that, you know, the Bill Walshes of the world, the John, you know, all these guys that were great offensive minds, they were head coaches, Sid Gilman. You can call whatever you want to call. The offense that I created, the go-go offense, whatever the people call it, I created that as a high school coach because I could call whatever I wanted to call. I called what I wanted to on, they did what I wanted on special teams, offense, defense. We did. That's what we did. The culture of the team. And really, I feel like I changed the culture and the climate of the team when I joined a team because that's, like I said, that's my gift. You know, be yourself when you get there. Like, that's my gift. I'm able to get guys to like, all right, let's go get hungry. Let's go, you know. Yeah, and so do I miss calling plays? Yes. I mean, the action of, you know, I've always liked the pressure. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a chaos situation. Right, eviction notice on the door. You felt
real pressure.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, calling plays is like, you know, sometimes when Sark's on the headset, you know, I listen to him this and Whipple, you know, like Whipple listened to me when I said, all right, coach, let's call this, let's do this. And Sark, the same thing. He respects what I tell him, like, boom, same at Hawaii. Like, everywhere I've been as a position coach, because the first thing I do is, you know, like, a great position coach is able to first listen, right? Because if you feel like you're a dude, you don't, you know, you don't, like, get upset that somebody else is, like, above you or something. Like, because I know, like, I'm going to be there, too. Like, it ain't, you know, like, okay, boom, all right. It's your turn now. It's going to be my turn eventually.
Right, right.
You know, and so when I'm listening and when I'm learning, I spend the whole, like, first 2 or 3 months just listening, learning, and feeling like, what's this guy's style? What's his coaching style? What's his play calling style? You know, what does he like in this certain situation?
Yeah.
Just observing. And then I start to add, like, okay, coach, we could do this. But the most important thing for me is to get my players and whatever system it is to play at the highest possible level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then he's like, he can't say anything from the standpoint, like, you know, be quiet, your guys aren't performing good enough. Right. It's like, okay, Brent gets his guys to go, you know? Yeah, so now when I give some information, it actually is valuable
and right.
it helps out.
No, absolutely.
No, I think it's a great point too, because we get a lot of guys, and we talked about it a couple weeks back, just like the interview process and how guys should evaluate their next step. It's like, man, just quit worrying about that. Just coach your guys you have. Like, no matter where you're at.
Yeah.
20 kids on your high school football team, you're coaching receivers, you got 3.5 of those guys. Just coach those guys up to that system, and eventually, like, it's going to take care of itself. Talk to us, and you mentioned a little bit, when you went from 2 years as a high school head coach and then you GA'd. Because you get a lot of guys, too, that ask that. I was in the same boat. It's like, you were a young high school head coach. I was like 24. Dan was.
Yep.
Get a chance to lead a program. Don't have a clue what you're doing.
But yeah,
just kind of lean on those experiences that you had. And then quickly find out. It's like, man, I've got a lot of responsibility. I don't have a clue what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow it works out and it leads to the next step. But talk about that, the difference between like going from high school head coach to a GA on a Division I staff.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was a very humbling experience. I tell guys all the time, I mean, like, you better be able to squash up that ego quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you can't, that's not really the jump you want to make, you know, because right. it's, you know, to go from, like, you know, I won, like, Coach of the Year in Pennsylvania and, like, kids living at my house and I've, like, you know, we raised $1 million when I was high school. I mean, we're doing, like, big events and
yeah.
I'm like, I'm the thing in the town, you know, like I'm the guy, you know, to go from like, hey, Brennan, great idea, but get my coffee first.
Yeah right.
You know, like.
Humbling.
I don't really, you know, but.
I'm not used to that.
Yeah. You know, like draw those plays up and then, you know, whatever. All right. Don't say anything to that kid. You can talk to this one, you know, like
right.
stuff like that. I'm like, dang, man, this is, you know, so
yeah.
The thing that really, you know, through that process, you really have to be able to reinvent in your brain to be able to believe like, you know, I'm still that guy who led that high school program. I'm mm-hmm. still a great coach, you know, because you get squashed down, you know, as a GA because you have to fit into that role.
Right.
You know, and so for me, I started just being like, all right, how can I help each coach with their guys? Like, what can I do to like help each guy? Just give them something like a little nugget that maybe their coach wasn't able to give them or he missed, mm-hmm. you know, and not take it personal that you're not in the position you want to be yet. But it's just right. one of those steps, you know, and it's like, all right, let me learn everything. I got to a point where I just started going around to every coach in the building. Give me some, here's a play. What would you do against this play? I remember going to Chris Ball. What's the 3 hardest plays for you to stop?
Yeah.
You know, going to Paul Randolph. Give me some player development stuff, you know, just
totally,
you know, Ryan Silverfield. He was there with me when I was a GA with him, me and Kenny Dillingham talking about plays and what we would run if we ever got to call it and all that stuff. Like,
right.
I just started, you know, like, forget it, man. Like, just let's just have fun with this thing. Don't get so stressed out about that. You're not in the position you want to be.
Yeah. No, that's, I think that's right on. We have one of the questions we get a lot, you know, when we have guests on that, you know, have made it, so to speak. And obviously, certainly being at the University of Texas, you know, pretty much everybody listening to this podcast is like, man, this guy's made it. What is one piece of advice you'd have for a coach that's just starting out, whether it's starting out in college, starting out as a high school coach, or wants to break in? Like, what's the biggest piece of advice you would give a young coach?
I think the hardest thing for these guys coming in is, you know, they see the dollar signs of it, you know, and I really just challenge everybody to just love the kids, love the game, and develop your own coaching style. Like,
yeah.
Find out who you are and do you really want to do this? Like, aside from, like, I've been in football since I was 5 years old. So for me, if it breaks my heart, win, lose, or draw, like, I'm going to be in football. Like, I've made that decision a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I went, you know, I like to tell people this from a standpoint of don't look at it for the money aspect. I went from a high school head coach making, what, 60 grand to GA and making 10.
Right.
Division two making like 8. Right.
Yeah.
And then boom, I get to Howard and I make 6 figures again.
Yeah.
Right. So, but you know, I was blessed right out of college that I got a chance to be in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I got paid by the NFL for 2 years, a pretty good salary. Right. So that helped me out. You know, but a lot of that was just getting my family out of the situation that they were in and taking care of stuff. So
yeah,
a lot of that money was gone, but I had some stuff left over, and I had, the way you treat people matters. Every handshake matters. Like, people you don't even think that are, like, I see football guys only treat football people right, but it's really like every person you come in contact with. So like a great story for young coaches, like, a guy that saw me coaching in high school and saw the way that I developed players and loved players and was taking care of them, he paid my rent for a full year at Arizona State.
Wow.
And gave me like five. He was like, all right, I'm going to give you like $5,000. I'll pay your rent each month. But here it is.
Wow.
Right? So that's how I was able to take care of my family. So all the little bit of money that I was making, they just gave it to my ex-wife. You know, like, here it is. Like, and everything was already paid for.
Yeah.
And just stories like that, like, you know, if you're just be a good person, you know, like, be good to people and just really figure out, like, would you do this if you didn't get paid? If you didn't, you know, like, if it wasn't.
Yeah.
I remember my first high school coaching experience. They gave me, this is when I was still getting paid by the NFL. He gave me a $500 stipend for the entire season. I was the offense coordinator helping out. Did a $500 stipend. I was like, coach, just give this back to the kids.
At this point, go buy a helmet.
Like, what's this going to do? Like,
go buy a helmet.
You know what I'm saying? At the time, I'm like, coach, I got, you know, like, that's crazy. I got t-shirts that are $500. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not going to help me, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, these guys are like, they think they're just going to jump to, they have to understand that all these coaches that are in the game, whether they're, however you got in, some people get in because of their, you know, dad or brother or however you get into the game, you still have to take those steps and go through it.
Right, right.
You know, and they're not just going to, you know, I've seen 2 or 3 guys instantly jump up and then they're let go, or they fall right back down because they didn't take the steps, right? Like, Coach London will always talk about an A to Z process, like A, B, C, can't skip a letter.
Right.
You know, and some guys just think like, oh, you can cheat your way up. It doesn't work like that. Like, you still have to learn how to coach.
Yeah.
You still have to love the game. You still have to continue to grow and get knowledge. You still have to treat people the right way, or you will go back and you have to restart that process over again. But you just have to be able to choose this as a, it's not a career, you know, like, the hours aren't, the people complain about the hours. They complain about it's like, do you love the game?
Yeah.
You know, and that's my biggest thing in recruiting. It's like, if the player loves football, he will do everything that has to get done to make sure he can play the game.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's like you said, it's not a career. I mean, you're really, it sounds corny, cliche, whatever, but you are choosing a lifestyle when you're going on the cut. It's like, all right, this is the life I'm going to live. Like, it happens to, it may pay my bills, it may not, but like, this is just the life I'm going to go live.
Yeah, my ex-wife asked me, she goes, are you ever going to get remarried? And I'm like, if somebody can sign up for this lifestyle, I mean, because I, you know, like, to me, like, I'm not going to, I'm just kind of, you know, like stuck in my ways. I'm going to coach football. Like, I'm not really going to change that deal. So,
yeah.
No, but you're the thing that I've appreciated hearing from you, it's like, because we've talked to guys, it's like they're coaching at a high level, but they've got kids, family, whatever, and their family truly suffers.
Yeah.
All right, they're making $600,000-$800,000 a year,
yeah.
which in the grand scheme of things, like, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, and their family's suffering. Like, for your situation, you're making it work.
Yeah.
You're making it work. You found a solution. So, man, and that's something we always preach on here. It's like, man, you can do this. You can coach at a high level, but it doesn't have to be at the expense of yeah. the people around you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just really feel like, you know, you're blessed. And if it was, you know, all these guys who say you can't do this and you can't do that because you're trying to be a high football coach or whatever, like top tier football coach. But at the same time, it's like, you can do all these other things,
right?
You know, yeah. So if you have a blessing, it's your job to. Yes, it's unfortunate that every time somebody in my family needs something, they call me,
yeah,
or my older brother, because we're probably the most successful people in our family. But at the same time, it's like, okay, to whom much is given, much is required. Like, no, that's no, what we got to get it done. It's part of it. We asked to be in this position.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted this. So yeah, whatever you're responsible for and you sign up for, you got to get it done. There's no like, oh, no, you know, I'll do it later.
Yeah.
No, I'm getting it done.
Well, and I think what stands out to me from this conversation is like you're choosing to make sacrifices for the people you care about. You know, obviously your players on one hand, like having players live with you. But then when it comes to family, it's like you don't have to jump on that flight.
Yeah.
Like you can take it easy. You can rest. But like you are choosing to make the main thing. And I think that's, you know, in all the conversations we've had with coaches along the way, it's like, really, like, where are people's hearts at? Like, is their heart to, like, make things a priority or not? Like, because your priorities are your priorities. And I think that, like, you've made that pretty clear. It's like, it's a people thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, the people in your family or the people in your room, your position group, like, those are the things that matter most to you. And I think that's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you jumping on with us, man. We are really excited to have you in Texas. We're here in Houston. You're in the area recruiting, and
we're gonna make an awesome trip.
I know we're gonna have to make an awesome trip this year. We gotta do it.
Let's go. Let's get on that lake.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Coach, appreciate you. We really appreciate your time, and wish you all the best this year.
Appreciate you guys, Master. Thank you.